You're in.
There we go. We're on.
Our camera's on and you're unmuted, but I don't see you.
Hey.
He's a telephone. Okay, well, welcome.
I'm not getting any screen from you folks.
Are you on your phone?
I am.
I'm not sure if that affects it at all, but nothing I can do on my end to give you access because our video is on.
Okay, well, I'll just listen then.
Okay.
Okay, well, welcome to the July 19th, 2023 meeting, the regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you'd like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and presentations at the time of the request. This is a preliminary agenda and subject to change. So I'd like to call the meeting to order at 1:04, and stand up.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, do I have a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
So moved.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. And so now we have a time for public comment, and citizens may address the commission regarding any item related to port business, including items on the agenda.
I brought this up last time. Just curious about the use of the port property to the north of the ferry terminal.
Okay.
So, and I don't know where to go for information.
And then ultimately there. So, Sunny, did you have any comment you wanted to make?
Tony,
sorry.
Yeah.
Do you have any comment you want to make? Okay, then I'm
sorry, you called my name?
We were just wondering if you had a comment.
We're in the public comment period. Okay, well, let's move to the consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. And there's four items: approve the June 28th regular meeting minutes, approve the July 11th work session minutes, approve the July 11th special session minutes, and approve the May 2023 warrants in the amount of $179,711.06 and EFT payments in the amount of $123,074.64. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I move that we approve the consent agenda as written.
I'll second that.
Any discussion?
No.
Okay. No discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and that moves us to our action item, which is to approve resolution number 2023-7-1901, which is a resolution directing the executive director to amend the 2023 agreement with Wenslow Architects.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2023-7-1901, directing the executive director to amend the 2023 agreement with Wenslow Architects.
I'll second that.
Okay. And before we move on to that, Greg, would you like to describe that to us?
Yeah, staff is requesting an additional not to exceed $20,000 amount to for Wenzlau Architects to develop an option that would be a full spatial build-out for up to 55 feet, which is what the expectation is from the that Kitsap County is going to approve for height limits. So that would add one more story, and we'd like to do that before the pre-application meeting if we're going to even explore this option, so that when we go in, we kind of give them, here's the maximum case for the county, Kitsap County team to review under the pre-app meeting. It does not require the Port Commission or anybody, is not obligating us in any way to do the full build out, but at least it's, I think, for, we should have that scenario for an option for the commission to consider going forward. And then wherever we end up at, you know, when we look at the financials, at least you guys have had the full versus going back and redoing the same, you know, the same work potentially. So it's kind of like a lot of times you basically you plan the full spatially what you can do, what's the capacity, and then you decide what the market will bear, what you want ultimately to happen. But this way, when we go through the pre-app meeting, anybody that we go out to for a developer or anybody for a potential tenant, at least we have that as a possible option for them too. Ultimately, it's going to be a commission decision down the road as to what you really want to see. Understanding that we don't want residential if we don't have to, which we've discussed multiple times. We want to do commercial development if at all possible, and understanding that we aren't necessarily saying, hey, we want spatially to have the biggest building. You know, we're trying to be empire builders here. It's just that this is part of the due diligence normally that you would do, and then you say, okay, here's the maximum we can hold, and then we decide what the market will bear compared to, and then try to hopefully align that with what commission direction is, what we want to accomplish. But this would be great to go into the pre-app meeting with having this work done, and so we have to get this approval done now in order to be prepared for the pre-app meeting. Otherwise, if a scenario came up where you go, oh, we should consider this, let's say a major hotelier came in and said, hey, we would do this if we had one more story, or if we decided, hey, the financials work because if we have one more story, then it really does work, where then the port doesn't have to go out for additional funding, then we would have that work done. So instead of doing the work twice, we just do it once up front. And it's pretty key for all the contractors too, like the structural engineering, all the borings that we're doing right now for the geotech, et cetera.
And I just want to emphasize that in the long run, if as the direction evolves, this potentially saves us months.
Yes, saves us months, and on the financials, we already know from a pro forma that it could save us $2 million on the project. So even if we decide that you don't want to pursue that, then, you know, at least you have that option, which I feel is like from a public standpoint, it's kind of our obligation to present you all the alternatives, and then we decide, okay, you decide what you really want to do.
Thank you.
I appreciate the fact that you gave us, that Sean came to us and actually brought this up to us, and he saw how uncomfortable we were initially and gave us time to think about it and kind of wrap our mind around it and realize why we're doing this, not necessarily doing it so, like you said, we can have the biggest building. We're doing it as due diligence, mm-hmm. that just by chance it could happen. But I appreciate you guys giving us the time to actually digest this and work through it.
Yeah, and I think we weren't really considering it originally because the county, you know, it didn't become that real in the comprehensive planning process until they look like they're moving forward with that a 55-foot option. So currently, it's not an option, right? You could go to 50 feet if you build a hotel specifically, but really it's a 45-foot height limit currently. So that's really what but since we know that they're going through the comprehensive planning, they know that they've tabled this, we know that the county actually initiated that recommendation,
yeah.
Probably trying to achieve these Growth Management Act policies and goals, That's why I see that they're trying to increase intensification potentially. Mm-hmm. So we may as well just acknowledge it and try to deal with it now. And it does save us money down the road if we were even to, you know, then you'd have it. It's under consideration. Mm-hmm. So thank you, yeah.
Great. Okay, did we have a motion to approve this?
We did.
Yep, and second.
So, any further discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you.
Good job.
So, that turns us to discussion items. Are there any topics that anybody wants to bring up? Okay. And that brings us to the financial report.
Okay. For year-to-date financials, June 2023, the gross operating revenue is at $1.42 million. Total operating expenses prior to depreciation are $1.22 million, resulting in net operating loss before depreciation of just under $3,000. Total net income, which includes other income and expenses such as property taxes and interest income and expense, is at a net loss of $89,978. And I just wanted to point out that we knew going in that we would have these losses, and because of the business product we're doing and the way our seasonality is here at the port, because we have a lot of revenues that we get in the later part of the year. And most of it's variable. So a lot of the guest mortgage and things like that, where our expenses are more fixed in nature due to accrual accounting. So that creates that kind of a variance in the earlier part of the year. And we have cash and equivalents of $2.54 million. With all, including debt of the LTGO bond, it's at $1.88 million, an increase of $100,000 from the end of last year. And we did receive notification that we are getting the finally receiving the funds of $193,000 from the Department of Revenue for the taxes, and they gave us interest. What, the tax, the money?
Yeah.
We realized in looking at the fuel invoices that we were paying for taxes on our diesel fuel that were, you know, we shouldn't have paid because we have a reseller's permit. And so we were not supposed to be charged those taxes. So we went back as far as 2018 and filled out new, basically amended our returns, and they paid us back not only those funds but interest of $17,000. So I was really, it was Stacy that actually found this and went through the work when we were looking at other things with the fuel. So it's a great credit we can receive and use towards
and
our business.
What is the total amount again?
$193,000.
Awesome.
Tell me how much is left on the bond.
It's 600 and I have it right here. 668,000.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah, I think it was just from the last meeting. I was just trying to talk to Audra to say, okay, we're trying to explain. We budgeted that for the year we know we're going to be profitable, but then we budgeted to say we're going to spend money on commercial development, business development, which we discussed like in the fall of last year during the budget process. Are you okay, commissioners, with spending that money knowing that at the end of the year of this year, it's likely that we won't be showing a net operating income profit like we did previous years? You know? So knowing that we're going to spend that money on business development, which we know we need to do in order to grow the port to be able to make it sustainable over the coming decades, right? So that's so sometimes when people see that, they might say, here's a snapshot of the financials of this month, and the first half of the year, of course, our cash flow is much lower than the second half of the year, which we know because of the seasonality that Audra discussed. So that's why we were trying to, you know, we're trying to follow up on that to explain to members of the public like Tammy was like, okay, we knew this was going to happen. This isn't a surprise. And we know that our cash flow starts to really ramp up in this quarter. But yet we budgeted for, so it's not unplanned. We know that we were going to show these potential losses during the front, especially the front part of the year.
I appreciate you bringing that up more than once to us, because it's one of those things where, you know, I remember our initial conversation last year.
Right.
But yet it's a good thing to keep that in our mind. And
right.
When people ask us, well, how come you're losing money? Well, you know, this was planned for. These are things that have to happen, that we need to have happen. And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But, it, you know, you forget. I mean, that was in October, November,
right.
December, I think, of last year. And we're used to seeing it being profitable, that kind of thing. So, and it isn't necessarily that our numbers are down. Our numbers are actually slightly up on just about all the lines of business. So, but we know that we're spending money to try to hopefully make money and or create alternatives for, you know, for the port, for lines of business, and then for commercial commitment. So, but I think that it's nice because now we have a member of the public here that was here for that last one, and I think they were like, well, why are you spending this money? You know, and then the other thing is we're spending some, you know, we said we were going to accelerate, we're spending some money on our software, but we know we have to upgrade the software, we have to change our QuickBooks software, whatever we're going to do. So that kind of accelerated the process from we were thinking about rolling it out a little further down the road, like at the end of this year, going into next year. We said, hey, the audit went extremely well. It would be better for us to accelerate it. Then also, I'm hoping it translates into lower audit costs because it'll be so organized and they can audit it so easily. I can't guarantee that, but but I think that would be, you know, that would be my hope, because we spent, you know, over $45,000, I think, on the state audit. It was a 3-year audit, but it'd be nice to get that down where they go, you've got everything right here auditable, and this software rollout now would mean that for the next audit, they would have everything in place, so it's just a lot cleaner. Even though they're doing everything superlatively well, actually, but it would be great to have that software. And Stacy, I did not send you the financial analysis that Stacy had and Audrey put together, but I'll send that to you because you had asked for that, Mary. Actually, so I apologize.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. That's a follow-up item. I apologize for that. But we've done kind of a financial analysis to see what would be the impacts of updating both the Marina software and my company.
Yeah, right. Excellent.
Yeah, we're excited, and it will help with that because everything will be laid out in a more organized fashion for the auditors.
And we have a lot of transactional costs that, and it doesn't really help us to build business because it's super manual and labor intensive for us to handle business. So it's, you know, as you build more business, you know, you're not going to double your business because you just can't even handle it, right? Because it's all manual or too manual. So this will be, I think it will really lay the groundwork for us to be able to build business. Simple things should be simple, and then we can actually focus on customers more. Mm-hmm.
Okay, was the fraud and
could you identify yourself?
Tammy Bowen, yes. Member of the public. Yeah. I'm just curious about, and I can't remember if we talked about this, maybe we talked about last week, but fraud and my exposure with so many people coming and going and the firewall. The fraud is just getting so sneaky, and it would occur to me that you have a lot of pretty high ticket gas transactions sometimes that. I don't know.
Yeah, no. We don't have a lot of cash transactions.
No,
we have very little because we don't accept it at the fuel dock anymore either. Most of our transactions are card not present transactions, they call them, because, you know, the customers will pay online for their mortgage and those kind of things. Those are more expensive for us to do. Instead of the card present transactions where they're there because there is a little more risky element to it, and that's what we pay for. So what we're hoping to do with this new software is going to help us to allow ACH which is one of the safest ways to transact. Debit card PIN-based transactions or card-present transactions and all of that.
We're a victim of fraud, and it's just getting so rampant.
It is.
And so just making sure that you've got security on your mind.
They're also helping us. State auditors has rolled out a cybersecurity check that they can do for you free. So I've reached out to them to see if they can look into our system and do that and work with Zach. So, because it is very prevalent out there.
It's terrible, and you don't really have a leg to stand on.
Right.
Our IT team is very on top of our cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
We also, with our conferences, we go to like 4 conferences a year, and cybersecurity is always up front and center, at least at one of the conferences a year, where they tell you about the new things that are coming out and the new ways to prevent it. And it's very informative that they try to keep us up with the different things that are happening and how to prevent them from invading your space.
Yeah. Because they're tricky.
But there was a rash of ransomware, in Kitsap County amongst a number of the businesses around here. And so we had already kind of audited with Olympic Educational Service District, who is our IT contractor. And they do all the school districts on the peninsula. Mm-hmm. And so we actually, we took a number of different steps to make sure that we don't have any interruption of business operations and that we have redundancy. So we feel like we are, even according to SAO, we should probably be like covered 7 ways to Sunday on that. But it's always more, it becomes really something when like your neighbor or somebody all of a sudden experiencing ransomware or somebody nearby. Mm-hmm. And I know that other government agencies, they actually were victims of ransomware in some utilities. So we took a lot of steps in order to be able to insulate ourselves from that. Yeah, but it's just regular phishing, is what you see that too. And so we've examined our processes.
Yep. ACH, yes.
Yep. So then you have to have checks and balances. But yeah, we will. I think there's going to be we kind of did our own looked at a lot of our transactions and how we do it. And you can never be too careful though, and they have sneakier new ways of doing different things. But there's many levels of security.
Two-factor authentication on all ACHs.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have MFA on just about everything we do now. They pretty much require it.
Yeah, that's good. Good question.
Okay, so that takes us to commissioner's report.
Could I just follow up with Tammy? I know at the last meeting I wasn't actually present. I was recovering. And so I wasn't able to hear everything you said, but when I looked over what you had said in our summary, what you were talking about, the Saltaire Beach public access and the opportunity to grow over there. I don't know because I wasn't able to hear everything that happened, but did we talk to her about the business that's going to start doing paddle boards and things down there?
I don't remember if we did, but we do have. So the Saltaire Beach is it's an open public beach, and as such, we're insulated because it's for recreation. We're insulated from lawsuits because it's under the state law. That whereas if we were to start charging for facilities or that kind of thing, then all of a sudden now it goes into our insurance. But because it's just a public access beach, we've allowed a company to go in there, and they just are taking kids out for paddle boarding as well as some adults, I think. In fact, I just saw them driving the blow-up paddle boards and launching them down there, I think, day before yesterday. So we open it up to them, and they can just conduct business out there necessarily without having to come under an agreement with us or under insurance, whereas in the marina we would have to charge. We have controls and it's secure. So I think, we just looked at it and said, well, we would rather than charge people to try to create something that they were trying to work with the county too to do, like the county parks to fall under their program, but the county didn't necessarily want to do it either or engage in it. So we just said, well, you can have access down there to be able to conduct your business, and the Port Commission was okay with it. I just said, hey, I don't see pursuing that as a charging them for anything, and then you adopt a whole lot of risk. But it's kind of nice because they're doing, they're having little kids out there and they're trying, and it's really low cost or just starting it up. We tried to put them in the marina, but because of the potential for current, we don't allow any swimming in the marina because of shock. So, or the potential of. So we said, hey, we're, you know, we tried to site them at either Arnis Park or over at Salt Air. And for either one, I don't think they would have to charge. And I don't think the Kitsap County was going to, they just didn't engage with them, is what I understood, at Arnis Park or any of the parks. So,
is there any restriction on doing, like, creating more park-like? Because I'm on the South Kingston Cove, and so they're always looking to create an environment where they can host bigger regattas. And I was looking at that, what they're building in Port Orchard with the public facilities money. And it's this beautiful sort of just seating area. It's all weather, you know. And so I was like, well, that'd be nice if Kingston, if we could grow our port out that way to make it a place we go and sit and have a cup of coffee and watch a regatta, or, like, you're, you know, make it easy for these people. But yeah. I understand there's, like, liability issues.
Because of the tides over there, too, I think you'd have to dredge in order to.
Yeah, it's just hard because of the.
Over on that side.
It's
shoreline work.
It's all.
Shoreline permits, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoreline permits are like one of the fishing zones.
Yeah. There's constraints. It's just that it's really. The tide goes out, so you know how far it goes way out there, right? And both on both the North Beach or Salt Air Beach and also in the Cove. So it's one of those things, like, you know, what are you using, you know, how are you using it exactly? So it's not, like, perfect where you could just, like, put it, and there's no dock, so trying to put anything in or dredge it out or deepen it is
pretty
impossible. Yeah. But, and then the access, it is a little awkward. It would be, you know, it's just really going to be difficult and expensive to try to add access to Salt Air Beach. But on the other properties, you know, that's where we've talked about what are we going to do with the Toth Hill property over time. But we have to kind of go through another. We went through part of the planning process for the comprehensive planning. And then until we get that rezoned, we really can't consider a whole lot because it's zoned residential. And there's constraints where what we'd want to do with it is not residential. It's more of a commercial use of that. But that might, you know, open up that property over time. But we've been looking to try to get permitting for a lot of these things. We applied for grants to do things, and it's been it's super challenging. And so but that doesn't mean we're giving up. We're just going to work on it. But it's the cost of doing that, and trying to how do you manage these things now? It's just a different world from a regulatory standpoint. They just have different. They've just restricted it a lot more and created a lot of environmental mitigation costs. So we have to figure out how to pay for all those things. But the commission has stated repeatedly, we want to, you know, part of our mission statutorily is public access. So they definitely want to keep improving public access. And then it's a matter of what's best suited for a specific property. But yeah, we would like to try to do more things, like with the Toth Hill property and that dock. Like, we were trying to replace the dock, right? So we're working on that. We just talked about it before we came here. Yeah, it's frustrating just to get something simple done. Yeah.
We were just talking yesterday about the Salt Air Beach down there and about, you know, public access and how easy it to get down there. And it just creates you can't really move the logs because then you open it up to the water coming in and destroying things. And even if you tried to move them, they come right back in. So it's like, okay, you know, you have to find a balance to how much you can do there currently, and so we just had that discussion yesterday that we were talking about it.
Yeah, I was just, when I was looking at the port property, I was like, I didn't know this belonged to the port.
Yeah,
it's been here. So.
I appreciate the fact that the staff has left the natural vegetation so that you've got these. There's a time of the year where there's one plant that blooms, and then there's another time that the wild roses bloom going down there. I mean, it just smells wonderful, and it just, I mean, to me, it's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's always, you know, invasive things that come in and try to, you know, but the how they maintain that with the natural vegetation, I really appreciate that part of it. Yeah. But, yeah, looking at your comments from last week. Last meeting.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, to add on to that, it's the federal permitting that is what is most difficult. The local permits are actually fairly easy to get, but it's the federal end of things that really made it very difficult. I think we've mentioned that many times, just for your edification.
Yeah.
And we're in, it's across all ports, across all public agencies, regardless, because they all have to go to get federal permitting for in-water, near-water work, pretty much. It's and it's really a conundrum. And they're also kind of going retroactively for people that recently got projects, had projects going on. So all of a sudden you have these completely unanticipated costs coming up that, you know, you were permitted, you were approved, everything was good, and now they're coming back at you for additional costs. And that's, you know, a lot of people, they're really in tight budgets. I mean, they don't have the money, and so they're kind of figuring out, now what do we do?
Especially small marinas.
Mm-hmm. Especially small ports, small marinas, it's really public marinas. But even private.
Private too, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. But that doesn't mean we're not going to give up, we're not going to find solutions, we're not going to be able to try to do things. You just realize that it also is taking a lot longer than we ever anticipated, because their permit approval process is minimum 2-3 years, and sometimes 3-4 years. So even when you get grants for these work, you're actually beyond the time frame and the schedule. So then they're like going back to the grant, which is a state grant usually, and they're going back to the state and saying, hey, I can't even get my permits. So now what I hope doesn't happen, because I sit on the review advisory committee for the state grant, for some of the grants, is that what I see the state does, they do two funding. They'll do the first one is just to get your permits and do the scope of work and the due diligence. And then they go and wait, and then they do another one once they get the permit for the money for the project. But, you know, you're talking about years out to get any project done, because it's a 2-year minimum cycle. So you're going to be 3 years just to try to go through to see if you can get this. And it takes 2-3 years to get your federal permit.
Sounds like selling peanuts.
Yeah. You got to grow them. So, but I realize from the public perspective, and if you're not really in this, it's frustrating for us. It must be really frustrating for the public. Why aren't you getting stuff done?
Right.
That's how I look at it. Right. You're here to get things done. So I'm sensitive, but I share the frustration.
It moves at less than a snail's pace.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're not giving up.
No.
We're going to get it done eventually.
One thing that's happening to some projects throughout the region is that they're losing their grant from the project they've been planning, have set up for, have done all the homework for, and because they can't complete it within the time frame, goes away. Difficult environment.
Something new.
So do you have other things you want to add? And commissioner report?
Just attending the community meeting that John Rose put on with Rotary and with the YMCA in Paulsbo. I was able to attend the second one, the question and answer portion. Wasn't able to attend the first one. But there weren't as many people as I thought there would be. But I think I learned a lot, and there were some good questions, and there were some good answers. There was, it was informative. It was informative, and I'm glad that we're keeping up with what's going on and, you know, listening to it and learning from it. That's my thoughts on that.
Steve?
Well, I'd piggyback on that as well. You know, the North Kitsap United project is really a project in its infancy. And, you know, I mean, with that group, you know, the Rotary, YMCA, and Radiant Homes, you know, attempting that wrangling of the fact that this is only just purely at the infancy of consideration, and bringing that to a very wide public forum, I thought was commendable on their part. And again, it's, you know, something that, you know, it's private property at this point. It's owned by a developer, And there's pieces of it that that do make sense to me in relation to a regional kind of facility. But at this point, you know, this again is so early in its projections and things like that, and the partnerships are also, you know, conjecture at this mm-hmm. point. So nothing's at all written in stone in relation to it. And you know, I felt again it was very interesting the concept of this to be more regional than oh well, it's just going to be in Poulsbo or Kingston would have their own or whatever. The idea really kind of stems from the fact that the Kitsap High School, you know, was originally permitted that they would have a football practice field and that they were required to go to North for actual football games. And it's that kind of idea of minimizing impacts, you know, with noise, light, glare, et cetera, and so forth. And, you know, if this has some kind of hope to go forward, it makes sense for it to be a more centralized North kind of project. And whether or not it's here or somewhere else in the North End, it makes sense on a standpoint of minimizing impacts to have a facility that is used by all and not just very centric to an urban growth area. But, you know, and so that's my 2 cents.
See.
Yeah, we'll see. It's in the infancy again.
There's aspects of it, and I guess this is my input, that the it can't really be called in its infancy. Rotary's been looking for property for several years, maybe five, and have looked at every piece of property that's big enough within the urban growth area. And every single one of them has serious barriers, whether it's permitting issues or water or whatever. So originally, they weren't looking at creating something for the whole North End. And when this opportunity with Radiant and the Y presented itself, their team is very excited because that piece of property is an average of 6 miles from every community in North Kitsap. Whereas doing something like this in Poulsbo, well, we all know how long it takes to get to Poulsbo, and it's a whole other thing. So I think that this possible collaboration is in its technical infancy, but the discussions have been going on, and for Rotary, it's a long-held dream. So, yeah, I'm very eager to see what happens next.
Yeah, so. I don't really know. It's just kind of feel like there's balls in the air.
And I think Radiant's perspective is that if there is not strong community support for it, they're not going to carry it forward. And I think there was an anticipation that there would be concern about it being outside of the urban growth area, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that Radiant walked away from that meeting with a sense that, yes, this is something, yes, there's concern about the growth management and the urban growth area and that kind of stuff. But if you're going to do it at all, I think their sense at this point is what a better place.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of exciting. Okay, and that takes us to staff reports.
Corey, you want to start?
Sure. Well, we're not typically, I'm not a weatherman, but I look at outside and we're in a drought condition. Just because I notice the sprinklers are running 3 times a day. So the meters are spinning, and that's like the only big difference right now. We're watering during the day just to keep the lawn green. I've cut back a few spots where it wasn't so important to compensate where we are running the sprinklers or the irrigation systems. Mm-hmm. Some of the parking lot traffic islands, they're very small and they look like sandboxes now instead of green lawn, but I thought we'd cut back on some of that stuff. Other projects are, they're behind on my timeline as far as the schedule actually goes. We're on track with getting the concrete done during good weather. Just fixing old stuff right now. I can get over the personal timeline issues. It's growth. It's uncomfortable. When I uncomfortable means I'm growing. So everything's good. Moving along.
Yesterday when I was walking away from the port office and I stood and I looked for a spot on the sidewalk that I could walk without getting sprinkled. And what I wonder is there a cycle so that, okay, if I wait 5 minutes, I can get through this without getting soaked?
Yeah. Yes. Midweek, we try to... I make sure the timings are off, different than when the ferries are coming in or when people have to transit. When the landscapers hit the cycle button, it turns them on and they run from the boat launch all the way around.
Yeah.
But we can alter that. There's some cycles that don't need to run in the middle of the day.
Even if it was just it waters for a while on this sidewalk and then goes off and then I can run across.
It's funny, I was getting ready to, when I came out, I was getting ready to turn around and go up the ramp and then up the sidewalk, uptown.
Yeah.
And then right when I was turning around, the sprinklers turned off.
Well, I got it right in the face yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I tried to get from one door to where we turned to go up our stairs, and I got to the very last second, and I just went, psh, right in my face. And I wish I was videotaped. I probably am. Because I thought this would look good on America's Funniest Videos or something. I had all these papers in my hand.
It feels so good.
It does.
You should especially on a hot day.
Ask Austin for that. I was like, dang it.
Yeah.
Camera view.
Yes.
So, it's continuously adjusted.
We want a picture of that.
No, we don't.
Thank you, Dory.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything.
Chris?
We are still working on trying to find a replacement for the customer service coordinator position in the office. We're getting close to losing our college students for the summer. They're going to head out in August.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out how to fill in the gap there for the rest of the peak season and summer-ish weather. We're moving forward with the MarinaGo software and the Sage software conversions. We're still looking over the contracts to make sure that it is what we want to do. We're already starting to schedule budget meetings.
Yay!
So we're going to start doing that all through August and September. We'll be meeting repeatedly to wrap that up so that you can finish that timely.
That's good.
I think that's it.
Okay. Mark, do you have anything?
Not a lot. I'm working on some permitting issues for a variety of things. Tori and I talked this morning about getting those rocks moved from under the G-Doc. We'll take care of that and get it underway. I think when we finally looked at the reports on that and analyzed the information, it's a much easier project to do and much less expensive than we originally envisioned.
Oh, good.
A lot less big equipment.
We're going to give that a priority, and we're going to place the rocks back on the jetty at high tide, but they'll be out of the way of the floats.
So that's kind of good. Excellent.
What we're trying to do, dealing with, I think Steve's comment about the county and the state being easy. I think nothing is moving at the core level. It's locked up, and you see all sorts of projects not here but all around that are in trouble because of it. They got clear down to bidding the project and can't get them off the ground. So I don't know what the solution is there. I think they're, for the commissioners, from a political standpoint, I think this is something that needs to be raised with the congressional reps. And so that everybody can get on the same page. Is it an issue? Yes. Is it not an issue? You know, it's like no one's talking about it. I asked Greg if this subject came up in the managers' meeting. I can't believe any manager that's working in a great environment wouldn't have this on their minds. Mm-hmm. It affects, I mean, all the grant money, as Greg mentioned. So anyway, I'm working with that, continuing to try to understand why this is, what is it that is driving this sort of insanity? Mm-hmm. That's stopping projects, stopping economic development. Yeah. So, I don't know. The other ones that I'm working on is we've still got the grant for the floats. We've got to figure something out there, give the money back. The restroom project, that's a bunch of consultants running around. We saw some of them today. And then Tori and I talked about today, moving ahead with some piling replacement this year. I think I've got all the hurdles cleared there to get the permits out. We've got the HPA for a 5-year renewal. We're trying to get the county to move on theirs.
5-year maintenance.
That's the kind of thing I've been fiddling around with.
It's a lot.
Have fun.
That's amazing. Yeah, so they're doing bore. Well, I don't know if they're borings or are they. What do you call it? Probes. Today, so that's what you see that truck out there today.
Yeah, it's doing pretty interesting. Everything's inside the trucks. So you look at it and
the geotech.
They're probing down. It's about as big as the probe that goes down is about as big as that coffee cup, and they're 7-foot sections.
Uh-huh.
No, they're 4-foot sections, and they're like 7-some pounds. They screw them together as they keep getting deeper and deeper, and they send shock waves and water pressure out, and the filter on there can tell what kind of soil they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for geologists, this stuff really
awesome.
Amazing. You know, I look at it and I'm like, okay, see you next thing. You know,
non-destructive testing.
Yeah, and it's a lot less destructive than what we did went through last week, where they actually took bore core samples out
with a split spoon sampler.
And those were really interesting because we could see what was in it. Where part of the parking lot underneath there was probably a dump at some point from what they got. It was really cool glass, most likely old glass, and then a lot of shells. So that was kind of neat to see those cores come out. But this one, you don't really see anything other than a graph on a screen. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's basically how they find oil reserves. So they like to have an explosion underground. And that sends acoustic energy, and then it reflects the acoustic energy differently, and that's what gives you those pictures that, you know, subsurface, and then you run that through. You can actually kind of run that through your neural nets, which is like AI. You keep processing that data, and then you can almost kind of figure out exactly what kind of oil, the quality of oil, or the rock, or it's granite, or whatever that you have there. So. It's a lesson-based way of doing geotech work on that site. So that's
awesome.
What they're doing out there today.
That
you saw that, the 40-foot container.
For the history buffs, there's a couple pictures in the office there of the Kingston area before the marina was built.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I did was overlay the new proposed layout on top of that kind of photo so you could see where the old shoreline was.
Mm-hmm.
But then, even more interesting, is Tori and I dug up the construction drawings of the core in 1966, and it has the original profiles, the topography of the ground, before they did anything. And it's kind of interesting, as you go down there, right up, Washington Street ended at Central.
Yeah.
That was the end of it. And it's obvious to me, even with those old profiles, that was all filled, like it could be a garbage dump. Before Washington Street was there, they were pushing stuff out on the beach. And it's just so typical of the development, but it's kind of interesting. And the geotech people were so happy to see that drawing.
Yeah.
They said, oh, this is enlightening. What they're seeing.
That's great that you did that.
It was good record retention, really. And usually it's the other way. It's, you know, we're looking at where are these? And there was a good catalog of blueprints. And it was third stab at it, and there it was. So good record retention and blueprints, but now we should scan all that, and Mark brought that up, that we should get that stuff scanned, and I'm trying to find somebody that can scan a document as big as this table.
Right, yeah.
That's on some weird old parchment paper, and it's ready to tear, so delicate, and we might have to do it in sections and then get it back together. But and we can do anything with computers.
Big flatbed scanners, or not flatbed, but big scanners will take it in gently.
I have a big printer, so you can just do a PDF with it all.
Yeah.
Print it out like that.
Yeah, I'll see where we're at as far as if I can get it in one
like a plotter?
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they make scanners that are like a plotter that will just feed that whole sheet in.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And then there's a way to scale
it. A lot of
understand the scaling of that, too, to be able to use that document for scaled purposes as well. That would be very helpful.
Yeah, we used Iron Mountain at the credit union.
Oh, yeah.
They did microfiche that was falling apart literally.
Yeah.
But they did some of the big.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
But it is.
Yeah. Get them out of the closet and get them scanned.
Right. Because everything's electronic now.
They may have to come back once they analyze the data. They were looking today, they wanted to try to get to 40 feet. On average, they've been at 15 hitting something hard where. You know, for that small a probe, they can't sit and beat on it.
Oh, so yeah.
It could be a stone or a glass jar.
Glacial till.
Exactly.
Or
a car. Or car parts. Or,
yeah.
Exactly.
1940 Pontiac.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
where we left that.
Well, they wouldn't start, so they...
People do very hard.
Jimmy Hoffa is not far.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hoffa is not...
Yeah, other coast. Other coast, right?
Good point. East Coast.
Yeah. So then, I attended the Washington Public Ports Association Executive Directors Conference hosted by the Port of Everett. And, to Mark's point, I think there are two things that I've kind of come away with, which one, we haven't done a lot of relationship building necessarily, or I haven't, certainly with the tribes. But we really had to really focus internally on getting our own house in order. But it is something that's now, it's going to become more and more important as we go forward. Well, it's something that's important all the time, but just there's only so many things you can do. But I reached out to the Port Gamble Skalm tribe, so I'll be, I was invited to meet with the tribal elders and to talk to them and start having more of a discussion. Mm-hmm. And to that end, so they just lost Jeremy Sullivan, their chairman.
Yeah.
So there is going to be a celebration of life this Saturday, and it starts at 1 o'clock at the government campus. But you can park. I'll forward this to you, though, so you don't have to search for it. But you can park at the casino, and then they'll shuttle you over. And it's basically most of the afternoon. And they invite, Jeremy, if you know him at all. I mean, he's always wearing, a sports regalia of whatever the different sports team. So he said, you don't have to do anything other than if you want to wear something that's like the Seahawks or what have you, that would be a thoughtful gesture. So anyway, that's this weekend on Saturday. Again, it starts at 1, and the doors are open for service at 11:30.
Okay.
So I'll send this to everyone. But at the Executive Directors Conference, there were two things. There was a Connie Sue Martin of Schwabe, which is a big law firm. She's done an awful lot with various tribes around the state and Oregon too, and Idaho. Anyway, she had a really great presentation, just talked about the history and some of the more of the legal, what's between the treaties and all these different things. Kind of went over a good overall summary. So I have that in a PowerPoint that I'll share with you. We'll send that out.
That would be great.
And I just think it's good, it just gives you a framework because there's an awful lot to know. I mean, you're talking about, century and a half anyway of where they, since 1855 and then what's happened since then. So I think it's just good to be knowledgeable about it because they're knowledgeable about it, that's for sure, right? And those are what really govern how they approach and how they look at things as a sovereign nation, right? Each of these individual tribes have a, you know, a sovereign nation, and what really, how really what the relationship is, you know, in terms of the actual property and reservation and on and off. Of course, there's a lot to it, way more than what you're going to capture in a PowerPoint or even a discussion, but anyway, I learned a lot just from listening to her because she's got a lot more depth in it. So I'm going to learn more about that, and I'm going to try to reach out to both the Squamish, Port Gamble, and just kind of have a routine, more of a regular discussion, and just if something comes up. And the other thing is that that I thought was really, well, there was also about Port of Everett and stormwater and with third-party lawsuits. And so they just discussed, basically they reviewed how they were sued by a Puget Sound Keepers Alliance and the steps that they had to take as a result for with the stormwater quality, right? So that was really interesting. And then the last thing was we did talk about what's happening at the federal level, you know, and how to probably engage and get some reform. Being a small port, we're not members of, usually until just recently, of agencies that really deal at the federal level. The Washington Public Ports Association is the Washington Public Ports Association, deals really more at the state level. But they do have some work with the feds. But they, and so like, for example, there was a lobbyist that a number we could have signed on to, it was like $200,000 retainer. So I just didn't see that was a proportionate value for the cost. But we need to somehow figure out how we're going to, we need to actually be looking at, put on our radar, how are we going to deal, have a federal strategy. Something, you know, it doesn't have to be elaborate, but what are our top goals, I think, for how we want to convey to the WPPA, but we join the Pacific Northwest Waterways.
Yeah.
So they deal at the federal level, and that's one of the reasons why I joined them. I saw that they were lobbying at the federal level with a lot of the exact, with all the ports along the Columbia River, but also ports all through the Puget Sound. So some of the other ports, they work through the AAPA, which is the American Association of Port Authorities, and that they are definitely federal, but they do some state stuff too. But they're really the big, it's very expensive to join them. And that's usually the large ports, and they have marine terminals, large marine terminals. So we're not a member of that. And I don't know that I'll look at becoming a member of it. But when you're small, you know, it's hard to have a seat at the table and get representation. So I think we need, it'd be great if we come up with a strategy, and I'll try to broach this subject even with the all the small ports at Kitsap All Ports meeting, and start talking to them about it, because they don't even attend a lot of these meetings, right, the conferences, so it's just not even on their radar. But it is until then they go, wow, what's going on with our permitting, and why are these costs, and why are they coming back at us for more money after we've already delivered on this project? So I think it's becoming, there's an awareness that's coming, becoming more of an issue. And the same with what you talked about, Mary, with the, hey, what's going on with my schedule, my grant? I'm not even going to be able to keep my grant. After I went through all that work to get a grant, now I've got 2-3 years down the road, and I'm meeting the deadline. So I think we have to have also have a strategy for appropriations. You know, what I saw from a lot of the ports, even like, so let's take the Port of Edmonds. Port of Edmonds has over $17 million in cash reserves. You know, where we have what, you know, $2 million to $2.5 million, but net to 1.88 million, right? So we're net 1.9 million. So that's not enough, right? We know that to be sustainable long term. We know that we have probably 10-15 year window before the shoe's going to drop, but we have to be saving that money now. And then we have to figure out a strategy to be able to fund this, whether it be through, I usually, you know, typically it's through your net operating income, or it's through grants. Those are, you know, two of the big ones where we can fund things. Or you could do through taxes, which nobody's a big fan of, right? And then appropriations is the last one. And usually appropriations have been pursued more by the real large ports with terminals, because we're moving cargo and using rail and things that are like federally regulated. Mm-hmm. But all these little marinas were built in the 60s, for the most part, in the 70s, under Warren Magnuson and Scoop Jackson, through federal appropriations, through the Army Corps, which built our marina. But then the feds have basically backed off and said, we're no longer responsible for your marinas, even if it's still a navigational channel. So the Army Corps has pulled back from supporting all these marinas and says, well, we're only going to really be responsible for navigational channels and marine terminals that move cargo in a big way. So that's put the small ports and mid-sized ports really at a disadvantage. So even like the Port of Edmonds goes, now how are we going to pay for a $25 million waterfront promenade and kind of reconstruction of their waterfront? We only have $17 million. They don't have lots of bonding capacity or taxing authority, right? kind of comparable to us. But they have, they're far more profitable and they have significantly greater revenue. So they do about $9 million and they make about $3 million a year. But you have all the maintenance and repair that you have to do as you go along too. So let's say they if they get $3 million a year and every 10 years they got $30 million, but it's super expensive because they've got all sorts of stuff to maintain. So they're in the same, we're all kind of in the same boat. Some to a greater or lesser extent have the funding for capital replacement. And that's kind of where we're at. So I think we have to come up with a strategy for appropriations. And the one thing they put up on, which was very interesting, was they did say, we're probably in a stronger position than we've ever been since Scoop Jackson and Warren Magnuson. Because back then, Magnuson and Jackson, one was in charge of appropriations and one was in charge of commerce. Well, that's exactly what we have with Cantwell. She's in charge of commerce. She's the chair. And Murray, Patty Murray, is in charge of appropriations. And then Kilmer, of course, is in the representatives, but he has a lot of clout and he works in transportation and different things. So we need to accelerate that. Any of our asks, we're going to really ramp up what we have to have a scope of work. But the question I had for the WPPA was, would it be better to try to get an appropriation for statewide, which I think makes sense, for all sorts of these small ports as well as mid-sized ports, just get all the ports, get an appropriation so that we get this capital reinvestment. And then hopefully if that were to occur, then they get whatever money we get and then it gets divvied up. And then now you have to come up with a program for cash flow for the life cycle. So last time was kind of like having a little kid and you don't start saving until the kid's like 60 years old, that is 70 years old, that's not going to work, right? So that's kind of what occurs. So we'd have maybe, if we can get something like that, we might get a new lease on life for all these marinas and small ports. And I think it would be really small potatoes in the scheme of things at the federal level. But we all still qualify. We're all still navigational channels for most of these little ports.
Yeah.
So it would be, I think we would qualify. So I think we just have to come up with a strategy for appropriations.
Yeah.
And I think we do need to start having more of an institutional awareness and understanding and relationship, not only at the institutional level, but the personal level with the tribes. And then we'll have to still figure out how to mitigate our risk for stormwater and other things, but try to really partner with the county. Mm-hmm. And I'll reach out again, like I said, I'll try to get Christine Wallace to see if she's going to be able to visit us in August or September when she's going to come and touch base with us, but reach out to her and see what we can do to start really building a more closer relationship with the county. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I learned.
Good information.
Yeah. That's it.
We've got a full plate to deal with. The relationship to develop the appropriation strategy is, and that's not something that the Port of Kingston can do. It needs to be on a statewide.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, so, okay.
Well, and the reason why that was one of the things that was really in the front of my mind, because Port of Bremerton got an appropriation for rebuild of their breakwater and their marina.
They also had a rather significant federal ribbon cutting as
yes.
well with
those three
all said members. So, right.
Yeah. Yep. And that goes to the point, like, this is probably like time is of the essence.
Yep.
Because while we have them in there and have this incredibly powerful yep. congressional legislation,
yep.
it doesn't last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we have 4 years. And they worked on this for years and years and years, but until you have the people in place to actually implement, which is just the way it works, at the federal level, you get seniority and you get things to happen. So they waited and worked and worked and worked on it until now. Now you have like a really a perfect situation. And it'd be nice to have this region really get the funding for really make it functional throughout the Pacific Northwest for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of get a whole new, you know, and you get that in capital infusion of capital from the federal level.
That's great.
A way to point this as well is the, you know, through the Endangered Species Act and, you know, creating, you know, ports that are cleaner in operation, et cetera, and so forth. You know, they have pump outs and, you know, improved pier ramps, floats, et cetera, and so forth for being more compliant with the code. Those are all really good things that, yeah. You know, in a retrofit, if it was a regional retrofit, just think about, you know, I mean, you improve salmon and food forage fish,
yeah.
And it goes up the food chain to our most endangered orcas.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. Zero, less so, styrofoam and less creosote, so get it
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely, get it out, let's get it fixed,
yeah.
And get it done. You know, mm-hmm. And permit it as well.
Mm-hmm. So it might be that there needs to be a all ports pledge mm-hmm. that can everyone can adopt, and then here it is.
But to me, this is the angle. The angle yeah. to use is what would be a good thing about this? Let's paint yeah. this picture in mm-hmm. this way.
You have to give them that story.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, but the story is reality.
It is.
Yeah,
it's very valid. We have creosote pilings.
Yeah, lessons learned.
And you know,
we can move on.
We could yeah. change those steel pilings that last three times as long and are stronger. We need less piles then because of that.
Yeah.
You know the whole picture. So yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
I could see you taking a leadership role among the other ports.
Yeah, we're
developing the. Here's yeah. what we're going to become.
Right. Yeah.
You're going to the small ports meeting on Monday that we're not able to attend.
Did they
right?
change? Were they going to change that?
They can't change it. And I'm expecting to. I also have, you know, there's a conflict with the Port Gamble Squam tribe to talk to them too.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So I have to wait and see how that's going to go. I'm waiting to get confirmation. They originally said, but then that was before the passing of their chairman, Jeremy Sullivan. So she's going to reach out to me.
Yeah, okay. Maybe there's a way we can, you know, attend virtually, you know, mm-hmm. from the conference. There.
Yeah.
I have to look at the, I think it gets over like at 4:30 and then there's a reception.
Oh.
No, the reception starts at 5:30.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, on Monday.
Right.
Yeah.
You could gather some other small ports, some other commissioners.
Oh, that's a thought, there. Yeah, from our area, and yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of there. The small port members don't go right. to the commissioner seminar.
Yeah,
so they don't.
So
I talked to him about it, and I said you could just drive over there for the evening and the day and come back. You don't have to even stay overnight. But even the cost of the they were like,
Are they members of WPPA?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Where is it at?
It's down in
Alderbrook.
Oh, yeah. So I went there.
In your little cottages.
It's so close.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, because they were all sold out.
So it's close.
Yeah, they don't have very many.
They don't
it's
have
like time
it's a big deal for them. To go to these things, that's why they're really, really small ports. They're micro ports, and so they don't have staff. A lot of them, so.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
So, is there anything else that anybody wants to bring up? Okay. Well, our next regular meeting is Wednesday, August 23rd, at 6:30. It's a hybrid at the Village Green Community Center. And we'll look forward to it. Maybe hear from you again. And with that, I think the meeting is adjourned.
I'll make a motion to adjourn at 2:11.
I'll second that.
Thank
all
you.
In favor?
Hi.
Hi. That was good.
That was good. I like it.